Breast cancer is the second most common cancer among women in the United States, with skin cancer being the most common. About 9% of all new cases of breast cancer in the U.S. are found in women under the age of 45. So I gotta say that again. About 9% of all cases of breast cancer in the U.S. are in those under 45. Unfortunately, breast cancer is being diagnosed in women under the age of 40 at an increased rate. This was recently published in a January 2024 JAMA population-based cross-sectional study that used data from the Surveillance, Epidemiology, and End Results database. Every year, more than 1,000 women under the age of 40 die from breast cancer. Nearly 80% of young women who are diagnosed with breast cancer find their breast abnormality themselves. Breast cancer is the most common form of cancer in women who are pregnant or have recently given birth. Again, guys, I've got to say that again. The most common kind of cancer found during pregnancy or within a year postpartum is breast cancer. If you listen to our immediate past episode, I mentioned that we had a patient who was diagnosed with DCIS during her pregnancy. And guys, that is the third pregnant patient that we have had in our group in about 5 years. That's astounding. That's enough to get your attention and go, what is happening? And they're all in different geographical areas, by the way. So our third patient, we had two invasive cancers, and then this most recent one, was DCIS, so ductocarcinoma in situ. Still cancer, it just wasn't invasive. Three in one group in about 5 years? That's insane. According to U.S. statistics, breast cancer occurs about one in every 3,000 pregnancies, with some estimates saying that it's as high as one in 1,000. And for that age group under 40, that peak incidence is between the age of 32 and 38 years. Because many women are choosing to delay having children, it's likely that the number of new breast cancer cases during pregnancy will continue to increase. So in this episode, we're going to look at breast cancer in reproductive age women with a focus on gestational breast cancer. It's also known as pregnancy-associated breast cancer, or PABC. Is mammogram contraindicated in pregnancy? And can chemotherapy be used while still pregnant? And what about radiation therapy? And here's a good question. Is it better to have mastectomy or just lumpectomy in pregnancy? That's a complicated question, and we're going to answer it. So listen into this episode as we dive into the facts regarding gestational breast cancer. Here we go. Just trying to keep everyone up to date on evidence-based practice because medicine moves real fast. This is Clinical Pearls.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, let's just rip the bandage off quickly. The truth is, the prevalence of pregnancy-associated breast cancer in women under the age of 40 has been increasing for the last 20 years. Now, some of that has to do with delayed childbearing until patients are a little bit older, and then the other has to do with unknown environmental issues. I've said it before, we're just getting unhealthier, BMIs are on the rise. So this is a reality, yes. The single most predictive risk factor for breast cancer is age, but it's being diagnosed now in women under the age of 45. And what's really scary, as again, we've already mentioned in the intro, is that the rate under the age of 40 is also going up. Remember, in this reproductive age population, it's about 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 3,000 pregnancies that will carry this diagnosis, which brings us to the other point that I harped on in the immediate past episode. Listen to your patient. Any breast complaint should be investigated dead stop thoroughly to make sure we don't miss anything. And it also makes a good point that when we have a new patient come in for intake, we go right for the abdomen, we go right for the vagina, and that's okay, that's appropriate, but it's not complete. Don't forget, with patient consent, of course, and explanation why we're going to do this, at least a cursory inspection, and ideally inspection and palpation of both breasts, especially, of course, if there's a complaint. Management of cancer during pregnancy requires a multidisciplinary team. This is not just for a single lone ranger here. It's an entire team because it's already complicated for any breast cancer patient. And then you throw in pregnancy on top of that and watch out. I mean, there's a lot of people involved, as it should be. Medical oncologists, gyn oncologists, surgical oncologists, hematologists, you got radon, you've got radiologists, pathologists, and of course, people like your regular pediatrician, neonatologist, the OBGYN, MFM, anesthesia. You got pharmacists that get involved. So all of these things, and including, of course, because this is a devastating diagnosis, outside of pregnancy, that much more in pregnancy, don't forget our behavioral health / mental health professionals. So it is a team sport. On January 26, 2024, JAMA published a population-based report on the incidence and characteristics of breast cancer in women under the age of 50. Now, here's an impactful and a devastating fact that we've already alluded to, okay? So right off the bat, here's an early clinical pearl. Breast cancer is the most commonly diagnosed cancer and the leading cause of cancer death among women aged 20 to 49 in the U.S. There you go. Now, I know we've all heard, oh, the number one killer of women is a biological cause, of course. A biological cause is heart disease, and that's true. But in that age range, guys, listen to that, between 20 and 49, breast cancer is the most commonly diagnosed cancer and the leading cause of cancer death in women in that age group, all right? So you got to be careful when people ask you, especially if you're taking your oral boards, if they say, what's the number one killer of women? That's a biological process. Then you'd say, of course, it's heart disease. And that's correct. If they say, what's the most common type of cancer in young reproductive age women from 20 to 49? The most common cause of cancer death is breast cancer. And unfortunately, while they have their young age behind them so that they can muster and withhold the treatment, ideally a little bit better than somebody who's, say, 75, that has its own issues in and of itself when they're younger, because young women are more likely to develop breast cancer that's more aggressive. These biological features are things like larger tumor size. They tend to have advanced tumor stage, and they have negative hormone receptor status. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Remember that there's estrogen, progesterone receptors, and in these young women, they're typically hormone receptor negative. And they also have overexpression of human epidermal growth factor receptor 2, all right? So negative estrogen and progesterone receptors, because if you have those receptors, they tend to be less aggressive and then respond to hormonal therapy. And then they overexpress human epidermal growth factor receptor 2. So if they've got more receptors for a growth factor, hence, that's why they're going to end up being more aggressive and grow faster, okay? Now, remember that human epidermal growth factor receptor 2, or ERBB2, was the old HER2 receptor, okay? So HER2, HER2, which is still floating around in a lot of literature, formerly is now called human epidermal growth factor receptor 2. So that's what makes these things aggressive, all right? When they have no estrogen, no progesterone receptor, and they overexpress ERBB2. Plus, remember, podcast family, that we really don't have any kind of national screening guidelines for women under the age of 40, except for some very specific high-risk women. Otherwise, if you're under 40, it's like, nah, you could do a clinical breast exam starting at the age of 25 every 1 to 3 years, and then definitely do that over the age of 40, but under 40, it's kind of loosey-goosey because we don't have any real structured algorithms for that except in high-risk women. In the U.S., according to most published reports, studies have shown that young, non-Hispanic Black women are more likely to be diagnosed with breast cancer than non-Hispanic white women, especially biologically aggressive subtypes like the triple-negative or the ER-negative tumors. According to this JAMA publication that we've already mentioned, which focused on the timeline of the year 2000 to 2019, the authors state, quote, "We observed an increase in incidence rates among those aged 20 to 49 years, especially after 2016. Non-Hispanic Black women between the ages of 20 and 29, guys, y'all get that? 20 and 29? And 30 and 39 years had higher incidence rates than all other races and ethnicity groups. They go on to say, incidence rates for ER-positive tumors, that's estrogen receptor-positive tumors, did increase, while those for ER-negative tumors decreased. So let's stop there for a minute. All right, so the devastating thing is that in non-Hispanic Black women, according to this JAMA publication from the start of 2024, wow, we're talking about an age range of 20 to 29. But the good news, if you have to find some good news into this, is that the incidence rates of estrogen receptor positive was actually going up, which means it responds to hormone management. So that is a good thing, but it's still cancer nonetheless. So it's a little bit of good news and then a little bit of bad news. Incidence rates for stage 2 and 3 tumors did decrease, while those for stages 1 and 4 increased. Is that wild? Like, what are you supposed to do with this data? I don't know. I mean, it's all over the place, right? So like, the good news is, hey, stage 1 diagnoses went up. All right, okay, well, if we have to pick a stage, let's pick stage 1. Yeah, but it also went up for stage 4. Okay, well, again, good news and not so good news. The take-home message is never discount the possibility of breast cancer in those under the age of 40. I mean, it's you would think it's almost unheard of, but it is not. These are young women who have the rest of their lives going on. And remember, in that age group, well, basically anything under 40 is still reproductive age. And that's how these two ships are colliding. All right. So you got the one ship of reproductive age and pregnancy, the other ship of an increased incidence of diagnosis under the age of 40. And bam, that's where they meet in the middle. So that's why I'm doing this episode. I realize, look, this is not about oncologists. I'm not an oncologist, but I know about breast cancer. I know about treatment, especially in pregnancy, and we all should. So this is why, even though we're going to talk about XRT, we're going to talk about chemo, we're going to talk about mastectomy or lumpectomy, let me give my disclosure, shocker, I'm not a breast surgeon. Shocker, I'm not an oncologist. But I don't have to be a breast surgeon or oncologist. I know the data because if it's my job to, if a patient comes in and says, I've just been diagnosed with breast cancer and I'm pregnant, so I'm here for my prenatal care with you, I don't go, well, somebody else. Well, I'll take care of your tummy, but your breast, that's too north. That's too far up from where I work, and that's somebody else's business. No, oh my gosh, that's devastating. Well, let's work together on this. This is a team sport, and I'm part of the team. So yes, we're going to talk about things not real into the weeds, and we are going to mention some chemo. We are going to mention XRT, but it's not to that detail of a hematologist, oncologist, but enough to be aware as a women's healthcare provider what we should tell patients if they ask, should I have a mastectomy? Should I have breast conservation surgery? And the answer is yes. It's yes to both of those because it depends on your preference. It depends on what kind of cancer we're talking about. It depends on what trimester we find it. But above all, it depends on, again, on your decision. It's the patient's decision. But there is guidelines. So if you find breast cancer in the first trimester, national guidelines say you should offer blank kind of breast surgery, which we're going to talk about. If you find it in the second and third trimester, you should offer blank kind of breast surgery. We're going to talk about these. Chemotherapy. I mean, surely you wouldn't take chemo during pregnancy, right? I mean, why would you do that? Well, the answer is you would do that because it's life-saving. And if you pick the right kind of agents, it doesn't hurt the child at all. But that's different than a biological agent, like a monoclonal antibody that we'll talk about as well. All right. So you see how this is, it is in our wheelhouse. We deal with women's health. As far as I know, breasts are part of female anatomy. I mean, men can have breast cancer as well, but that's not our focus, and that's extremely rare. So we need to be aware of this. All right. I have derailed and have lost my outline. Okay, well, anyway, all to say is that these two ships will meet, right? Breast cancer and the diagnosis of PABC. PABC, that's pregnancy-associated breast cancer. PABC or gestational breast cancer is all the same thing. So let's talk about that diagnosis real quick. PABC or gestational breast cancer is breast cancer diagnosed, shockingly, during gestation. Doesn't that make sense, right? During lactation or during the first year postpartum. So it's just like perinatal mood disorders have been extended to include the first year postpartum. The term PABC or gestational breast cancer has to do with the up to the first year after delivery. Okay, we've talked about the numbers already. 1 in 3,000 is what most U.S. databases quote. There are some international studies that say it could be as high as 1 in 1,000 if you look for it. Which is even scarier. But the idea is it's not 1 in 100,000. 1 in 1,000 and 1 in 3,000 is still nothing to balk at. Let me give you these percentages that were recently reported, and it puts things in perspective, okay? So PABC, pregnancy-associated breast cancer, in women under the age of 45 is about 7% of all breast cancers. 7%. So you can look at that like, oh, it's just 7%. I view that as 7% is damn high. That's a lot. So all cases of breast cancer, we're talking about U.S. numbers here, 7% are under the age of 45. Listen, if you bought a plane ticket on American Airlines or Virgin, whatever, not a sponsor, and they said, here's your ticket. Thank you for flying the friendly skies. Is that somebody else? Is that somebody else's logo? I don't know. Whatever. And by the way, there's a 7% chance that this is going down. You'd say, hell to the no, a refund. So 7% is nothing small, okay? Especially when you're talking about breast cancer in a young reproductive age woman. 7% is a big deal. Now listen to this. 10% of breast cancers are now being diagnosed under the age of 40. So it was 7% under the age of 45. But under the age of 40, it was 10%. Man, I don't know. This is frightening to me. 1 out of 10 are under the age of 40? No. And I don't know how to change that. I wish I could. But that should just tell you, if you've got a daughter, if you've got a sister, if your wife is under 40, get that daggone mammogram. You've got to adhere to breast cancer screening. That is scary to me. Now, you want to find it early, of course, like a stage one has the best prognosis. But it gets a little bit more complicated in pregnancy, which is the focus of this episode, and we're going to talk about here in a little bit more. But remember these stats. 7% of breast cancer under 45. 10% in women under the age of 40. The incidence, remember, has been increasing, but the diagnosis seems to be greatest in the postpartum interval when some of those pregnancy changes of the breast have now gone down, with most cases, actually the majority of cases that are related to gestation being diagnosed within the first 6 months postpartum. Okay, so yes, it is found during the pregnancy itself, but remember the diagnosis goes all the way to the first 12 months postpartum, and once some of those breast changes go away, even though lactation can still be happening, breast engorgement is done, the breast has more or less gone back to its original anatomy, and so by 6 months, that's where the most of these diagnoses happen. While patient outcomes for breast cancer overall have continued to improve across all subtypes, that's the good news. The not-so-good news, again, is that the prognosis tends to remain poorer for patients with gestational breast cancer and those that are diagnosed postpartum. And the reason is varied from the increased varicosities, the increased circulation to the breast, later diagnosis, misdiagnosis because you attribute it just to lactation or mastitis or whatever. So the prognosis tends to be worse. It's those same breast and lactation changes that kind of put us behind the ball here, right? One of the longest standing methods for breast cancer detection is what? Palpation. That's why there's a clinical breast exam. That's why there's patient self-awareness, no longer patient self-check, but breast awareness. And part of that is just knowing what your breast feels like and seeing if there's any asymmetry or new mass development. However, all of those pregnancy changes, even with lactation, can mask a lot of these changes, making it go unnoticed, hence the poorer prognosis. Plus, according to the CDC and other sources, many symptoms of pregnancy and lactation are very similar to the warning signs of breast cancer, so patients as well as healthcare providers can mistake that as a normal finding. So especially in patients who come back with lactational mastitis, hey, that's a real thing, but follow the diagnostic code and tell them, you've got to come back in 2 weeks. If this thing is not better, we're going to be super aggressive and include an ultrasound, make sure we're not missing anything, because we are not going to let that go to chance, okay? Don't assume anything with the breast. Now, common things are common. I'm not trying to say at all that all mastitis is Peugeot Orange, okay, or Paget's disease. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying do our due diligence and be a patient advocate. That's all. All right, now that we've stated that, let's get on to diagnosis. All right, mammography. Surely you're not going to do a mammogram in pregnancy, right? I mean, what about the radiation? I mean, what's wrong with you? Ah, just kidding. Mammography is totally safe for pregnancy when the indication arises. According to the latest American College of Radiology, the ACR, and their appropriateness criteria for mammogram, mammography is usually appropriate and should be used as an adjuvant to ultrasound. Did y'all get that? As an adjuvant to ultrasound. In other words, ultrasound is the best way to go. So first pass in pregnancy, plus trying to squish a pregnant little booby in the little planes of the mammography machine is just probably not ideal. It's got to roll. You got to do it. But first, start off the without doubt, anything to investigate into the breast pretty much is a breast ultrasound with a skilled technician and a radiologist who's trained in reading the changes of a breast during both pregnancy and lactation. But yep, mammography is not contraindicated in pregnancy. Those last guidelines from the ACR were in 2018, and they were published in the Journal of the American College of Radiology, which is very appropriate. So mammography is not contraindicated. If you take a look at the millirads exposure with a standard two-view mammogram, even if you do a diagnostic, it is negligible radiation to the baby with additional abdominal shielding, all right? So if you ever ask, can you do a mammogram in pregnancy? Absolutely. You can do a standard two view. You can do a diagnostic because the risk-benefit profile there benefits trips towards the benefit. But it does require a standard procedure, abdominal shielding. That's just a no-brainer, okay? So abdominal shielding is recommended. Although, it's odd though, there's no data regarding fetal outcomes when mammography has been taken without shielding. So it's just something because we don't know, it just seems to be safer and why not? That's an easy thing to do. So even though mammographic sensitivity may be slightly altered based on the water content of the pregnant breast or during lactation, there's higher density, there's loss of contrasting fat in the pregnant or lactating breast, it still has value. Based on the American College of Radiology, it's like, yeah, it's got some limitations. However, those limitations don't drop it into below the line of usefulness. So it is still has its sensitivity for breast cancer, all right? So can you do a breast cancer screen with mammography during pregnancy and lactation? Absolutely. However, during pregnancy and lactation, the gold standard, the tip of the first line, at least the first pass, doesn't have to be the only thing that you do, but the first line investigation should be ultrasound because that is almost 100% effective in detecting masses that are localized to the breast, and it's a super non-invasive. It doesn't hurt any, okay? However, with very large pendulous breasts, the depth to which the ultrasound can penetrate does have some limitations, right? So in very large breasts, you kind of lose some of that sensitivity. That's where you kind of go, look, I did the best I can. I got the best penetration that I think I can get. But of course, as you go deeper in penetration, you lose some of that accuracy, some of that imagery. So that's where you have to do supplemental mammography, all right? But ultrasounds, first line for the breast, as the first kind of tool, no question. Then comes the question of MRI. And MRI definitely has a place, especially in high-risk patients, but in pregnant or lactating women, there's really not a lot of data that it's any better than what we've just talked about, okay? Plus, if you don't do contrast, if you don't do gadolinium, you lose a lot of value. And so if you say, well, just do gadolinium, no, that's not a good idea because gadolinium in pregnancy is contraindicated because it does pass through the placenta, go to the child, and it's not that that's directly harmful, but it's excreted by the child into the sac. So what you get is this recycled amount of gadolinium to the child that he can't get rid of. Okay, so gadolinium is not to be used in pregnancy in general. That's kind of a guideline, all right? So we're left with ultrasound, we're left with mammography, and those two, in addition to biopsy when needed, form the basis of diagnosis. All right, now that we've done diagnosis, notice what we're talking about here. We've gone to with diagnostic procedures. Now we're going to get into treatment. And the question is mastectomy required? Or what about breast conservation surgery? What about XRT? What about chemo? This is the area that we're going in, all right? So now that we've covered diagnostics, let's jump into the next section, which gets to treatment. Thank you for being part of our podcast family. We really are grateful and thankful that you've chosen to take this journey of medical education with us. You're listening to Clinical Pearls. According to the National Comprehensive Cancer Network in the U.S., in general, pregnant women with breast cancer should be treated according to the same guidelines that apply to non-pregnant patients, with just a little bit of slight modifications to protect the fetus, and that mainly has to do with radiation therapy. However, the treatment should be approached with curative intent. In other words, don't kind of go, well, we'll remove half of the mass for now, half later. No, if you're going to do breast surgery, you're going to do breast surgery. Now, we're going to get into mastectomy versus breast conservation in a little bit, but remember that the goal should always be curative. Therefore, treatment of gestational breast cancer should not be unnecessarily delayed because of the pregnancy. Remember, this is all part of shared decision-making. Informed consent has to be taken. And I do want to bring up one important question here that patients almost universally ask. What do y'all think that is? Okay. Oh my gosh, I'm pregnant and I have breast cancer. What's the main question here? Should we stop the pregnancy? Right? I mean, that's very valid, and that's a valid concern. That is almost 100% of patients who will ask that based on surveys and our own experience. Now, although pregnancy termination can be considered during treatment planning, it's important to note that pregnancy termination, according to all of the governing bodies here and all the expert opinions, quote, has not been demonstrated to improve outcomes with gestational breast cancer, end quote. So I think we need to say that again, right? Even Susan G. Komen Foundation recognizes this. So here's a quote directly from them, quote, ending a pregnancy does not improve survival, end quote. Now, if it's highly aggressive, something really is off, and it's in the first trimester, that's where shared decision-making kind of comes in for maternal benefit. I know it's a tricky deal, guys, and we are not, trust me, not getting into the whole social political aspects here. I'm talking about for a true medical indication, if the mom's life is at severe jeopardy, this has to be a patient-centered approach, all right? The American Cancer Society recognizes all of this complexity here, and I like how they have it in part of their patient-facing information. So here's the information from the American Cancer Society. Quote, some earlier studies found that ending a pregnancy does not seem to improve a woman's prognosis. Even though there were flaws in some of these studies, ending the pregnancy still is not recommended when breast cancer is found just for prognosis improvement. So in other words, ending a pregnancy does not improve survival. We've already established that, okay? But the American Cancer Society goes on to say, quote, still, so whenever a sentence starts with still, you know, here's the other side of the argument, right? Here's the flip side of the coin, the other consideration. So they go on to say, quote, Still, this option, talking about pregnancy termination, may be discussed when looking at all the treatment choices available, especially for metastatic stage 4 or aggressive cancers that need treatment right away and delivery is not in the short interval. Does that make sense? So like inflammatory breast cancer, that's highly aggressive. If you diagnose that at 8 weeks pregnancy, to say, we'll just follow up with your care postpartum, that may jeopardize the mother's life. So it's a very complicated issue. But in general, does pregnancy termination affect prognosis for pregnancy-associated breast cancer, PABC? The answer is no. That brings us to local regional surgery or local regional treatment. The same local treatment options that are available for non-pregnant patients should be considered for pregnant patients, with the exception of radiation therapy. Some experts, like the National Comprehensive Cancer Network here in the States, have recommended mastectomy rather than lumpectomy when the breast cancer is diagnosed in the first trimester because of the delay to get radiation done. So here it is. Here's a spoiler. We're going to talk about XRT a little bit more down the road, but it fits in nicely here. You cannot do radiation therapy during pregnancy. You got to leave that for postpartum, okay? So the decision of mastectomy or lumpectomy depends on the delay to complete the treatment. Because we all know, guys, with early stage breast cancers, lumpectomy and XRT has the same survival as mastectomy. But if somebody's in the first trimester, that could be problematic, right? Because while you can start some neoadjuvant chemo after the first trimester and lumpectomy is done, you cannot get XRT until postpartum. So it's a big deal here for diagnosis based on trimester and whether a mastectomy is going to be done or a lumpectomy. Yes, there is a place for breast conservation surgery, but once again, typically it's based on the size and location of the mass and the trimester of pregnancy. There has been a retrospective study that looked at the interval from breast-conserving therapy and radiotherapy, and as you would suspect, it did report a significant decrease in disease-free survival based on the amount of time that the patient waits between the breast conservation surgery and starting radiation therapy. So that is one of the concerns here. And in general, the delay, the cutoff is kind of like 65, 70 days, right? So 2 months. So that's a little controversial, but that also helps gauge some treatment options here, all right? So if you have somebody in the first trimester with breast cancer, most experts say, hey, that's just way too long to wait for radiation therapy to complete the process. Mastectomy here seems to have a role. And that is the opinion of the National Comprehensive Cancer Network. So again, if you're asked, especially on the oral boards, for breast cancer in pregnancy, gestational breast cancer, is it mastectomy or breast conservation surgery? The answer is yes. It depends on the location of the mass, what it looks like, its size, and most importantly, the trimester that it's found, and the interval between breast conservation surgery or the index breast surgery and radiation therapy. The take-home message, as we've already stated, as we wrap up this issue on breast surgery in pregnancy for breast cancer, is that the type of surgery and the approach has to do with patient's desire, tumor characteristics, mainly size, and if it's multi-centric location or if it's central in one spot. All of these things are going to go into the decision for what kind of surgery will be done. Patients who have any kind of contraindication to radiotherapy, maybe because they have got a history of previous radiation therapy, are not suitable for breast conservation surgery. Now, there are few absolute contraindications for breast conservation surgery, and early pregnancy is among them, all right? So mastectomy is preferred in the first trimester of pregnancy to avoid the impact of delaying radiation on the outcome of the cancer. And what about axillary lymph nodes? Yeah, it's all right. You can do that. And there's various opinions here as well. On the one hand, you have the National Comprehensive Cancer Network from their 2019 guidelines that say, you know what, let's just stay away from putting radio tracer to try to find the sentinel lymph node. We don't have a lot of data. Although it does recognize that based on shared decision-making on a case-by-case basis, if the benefit is there for the patient, then it can be considered over 30 weeks of pregnancy. pregnancy, all right? And then there's other data that says, hey, you know what? The risk of fetal irradiation is actually pretty darn small, especially if you wait until over 30 weeks. There doesn't seem to be any harmful maternal or fetal outcomes with this guidance. The two kind of tracers to try to find the sentinel lymph node that should be avoided in pregnancy, the first one is isosulfan blue. So isosulfan blue, and then the other is methylene blue. So sentinel lymph nodes, you can always leave for postpartum. However, based on who you read, you can try to do that over the 30-week mark of pregnancy, even with a radio tracer, because even though we're limited in data, the data that we do have is reassuring, especially over 30 weeks of gestation. So case by case, shared decision making, okay? You can always leave it to postpartum, but if the benefit is higher than the risk, then at least do it over 30 weeks. Now, we've already touched on XRT in general. XRT is delayed until after delivery, so that's a little bit different. It's just stay clear of that because of the fear for fetal irradiation. So most leave all forms of XRT until after the baby has delivered. This brings us now to chemo. And yes, you can do chemo during pregnancy as long as it's after the first trimester, all right? So let's get through major organogenesis. And it seems to be very well tolerated, especially with the typical types of chemo that's used for breast cancer. Also remember that you have to stop chemo, so start it after the first trimester. And here's a clinical pearl. You've got to stop it at least 3 to 4 weeks before scheduled delivery, which brings us to our next point. Anybody with breast cancer, try to get out quickly. Please don't wait for 40 weeks or 41 weeks. It is allowed to get out around 34 or 35 weeks just to separate the two to continue maternal treatment, all right? So is breast cancer an indication for late preterm, early term delivery? Heck yeah, it's breast cancer, get out. So remember that if you start chemo, and we're going to talk about just a few categories here where chemo says that, would say that chemo can be done outside of the first trimester and before delivery, try to get out by about 34 weeks to continue the rest of the therapeutic plan and stop chemotherapy 3 to 4 weeks before scheduled delivery. The NCCN guidelines do note that breast cancer found during the second and third trimesters can be safely treated by the combination of adriamycin, which is doxorubicin, and cytoxan. The chemical name for cytoxan, of course, is cyclophosphamide, right? So doxorubicin and cyclophosphamide is okay. There's limited safety data, just in case somebody asks you about the taxanes. That is a different class of chemotherapy, although there is some reassuring information. We just don't have a lot of info, okay? Most of the available data regarding chemo for breast cancer and pregnancy is anthracycline-based chemotherapy. That is usually given every 3 weeks. And in some reported case series, chemo that's given as a dose-dense schedule, like treatment every 2 weeks, actually seemed to be pretty well tolerated and did not seem to increase the risk of maternal or fetal complications than when it's given every 3 weeks. So there's some varieties here on the kinds of chemotherapy that can be given. So I know it's kind of almost counterintuitive that, wait, you want to give chemo during pregnancy? Absolutely, if it's neoadjuvant and has potential maternal life-saving ability and it's in the right class, it seems to be okay. However, it's not all rainbows and lollipops, right? There is some concern. There is, mainly in terms of fetal growth restriction and preterm labor. But again, the net benefit for potentially curative adjuvant chemotherapy is still there, all right? So without a question, the appropriately dosed and the appropriately selected chemotherapeutic agent with shared decision-making, you do not have to wait for delivery for a chemotherapy to be given for pregnancy-associated breast cancer. So we've talked about breast surgery. We've talked about XRT. We talked about chemo. And that leaves us with some forms of biological therapy. And right now, things like Herceptin, which is anti-HER2 therapy. Again, if you read a lot of the literature, there's still that term, HER2, even though, of course, it's now changed its official name. So in general, Herceptin, the monoclonal antibody that works by binding to the HER2 receptor, is contraindicated. Okay, that has been linked to bad pregnancy juju, okay? So don't do Herceptin. Stay away from that biological right now. We're talking about skeletal abnormalities in the child, some neonatal death issues, pulmonary hypoplasia. So as of right now, it's no-go. And even the U.S. FDA says, yeah, let's stay away from exposure to this agent. There's real concerns here. And so that is no. Lastly, as we get to wrap this up, a quick note about breastfeeding and patients who are on chemotherapy. Now, even though we don't have a lot of data, we do have some evidence that breastfeeding or lactation for patients who receive systemic chemo, that's probably a no-go, okay? And any kind of systemic adjuvant therapy. So it's not just systemic chemo. It's endocrine therapy, targeted therapy, immunotherapy, any other kind of neoadjuvant systemic care should be considered contraindicated for lactation. And since the benefit here is life-saving for the mother, it's not like we're going to say, oh, I'd rather you breastfeed. Go ahead and knock yourself out for 6 months, come back in a year, and then we'll start. No, no, no. In this case, the medication, the neoadjuvant therapy, wins. You say, sorry, we're just not going to breastfeed because I want to save you rather than the breast milk. All right. So that's just something to consider. So is chemotherapy considered a contraindication for breastfeeding? The answer is yes, as is endocrine therapy, targeted therapy, immunotherapy, and systemic chemotherapy. All right, podcast family, we have covered gestational breast cancer, otherwise known as PABC, pregnancy-associated breast cancer. The take-home message is just because a patient is young and under the age of 50 does not make her immune to this diagnosis, and especially in reproductive age women, take any breast complaint to heart because breast cancer under the age of 40 is increasing. And there's some things that you can do with pregnancy and some things that you cannot do during pregnancy for pregnancy-associated breast cancer. So this was all about bringing awareness to this topic since we recently had a patient in our practice with DCIS presenting as Paget's disease. So just something to keep in mind. I hope you found this helpful. And as always, we'll post our references on our reference list. All right, let's bring it home. All right, podcast family, that brings us to a wrap. As always, we're thankful for you, and we're glad you're part of our podcast community. We'll see you on another episode of Clinical Pearls.